This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 23. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what our brand new title says it is. It's a show focused on everything to do with books and authors in the fantasy book genre. Whether we're talking about epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, other kinds of fantasy, I don't care what kind of fantasy, expect to find the best and brightest authors from all those various corners of the fantasy book world here on the show. So let's get started off this week with my update on what I've been up to. I've wrapped up the first draft of my current urban fantasy game lit project. I'm really excited about how the book wrapped up. And now it's time to move forward and start outlining the next book that I'm going to be working on. And that is the third book in the Sapiens Run trilogy. Book three will be titled Cybers Underground and takes the characters into a dark underworld as they go on the run from authorities who try to stop them from publicizing information that verifies the identity of a major domestic terrorist group. If you want to dig into that storyline, you can go ahead and get started with book one, already out, Cybers Change, and book two is available for pre-order and will be coming out at the end of June. So this book series will be coming out in this calendar year, and book three slated for early fall. As always, if you're interested in more information on what I'm up to, check out my fan group on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Superfans, or my Facebook author page at Jamie Davis Books, and my website and blog, jamiedavisbooks.com. Now let's go ahead and get into our guest for this particular episode. Today we have Haley Stone joining us. This was a lot of fun. I enjoyed talking to Haley. She's a writer, editor, and poet from California. She's best known for her adult sci-fi novel, Machinations, which was chosen as one of Amazon's best sci-fi and fantasy books for 2016. Its sequel, Counterpart, is available also. In addition to this, Haley has published a cult hit, Make Me No Grave, a weird Western. And if you're not sure what a weird Western is, picture like the Wild West with cowboys and six shooters and all that stuff with magic and fantasy elements. It's pretty cool. And I have to say, I enjoyed it. Its sequel, Render Up the Ghost, is forthcoming soon from Atheon Books. Her short fiction has also appeared in places like Fireside Fiction, Apex Magazine, Flash Fiction Online, and various anthologies. And she even has some speculative poetry out there online if you want to look for that. So check out my chat with Haley and find out why I think you might really enjoy her take on a fantasy version of the Wild West. Hi, Haley. Welcome to Fantasy Focus Podcast. It's great to have you here on the show. And I think we'll just start off by giving you an opportunity to introduce yourself to our audience. I'm sure some of them know who you are, but there might be a few who don't. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I am a speculative fiction author and poet. My most well-recognized work would probably be the Machinations series, which is an adult sci-fi series. About a clone woman who takes over the role of her predecessor during a robot apocalypse. And my most recent book would be Make Me No Grave, which is a weird Western.
And that's pretty cool, actually. I just started reading it, and I really enjoy it. I guess it's what I expect when you say weird Western. It's exactly what I expect a weird Western to be. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's definitely a good thing. I did have trouble categorizing it initially because while it has a few fantasy elements, I didn't feel Western fantasy really fit what it is. And I didn't want to mislead my readers in any way. So I wanted to be upfront that this is a weird Western. It is primarily a Western, but it does have fantasy elements.
So have you been one of those people that's been writing kind of all your life, and this has been something you've always aspired to, or is this something you kind of stumbled into?
Oh, yeah. I like to tell people that I'm one of those annoying people who have always known what they wanted to do since I was very young. Back in as soon as I could start stringing sentences together, I was writing my own stories. And it just comes naturally. It's something that brings me a lot of joy, although it also brings a lot of frustration. It's one of those things where the better you get at something, the more you see where you need to improve. So I love writing. I've always been a writer, and it's really what I want to do for the rest of my life. So I'm hoping to one day just be a career writer.
That's awesome. And you know, you're right. When you first start out, you have no idea what you're doing and what's right and what's wrong. And you're right. The more you write and the more your work gets out there, the more you realize painfully that you have a long way to go to improve your craft.
Oh yeah. And you read more and you see what other writers are producing, and it can be very inspiring. You see next level stuff and you're like, Ooh, I want to do that. How do I do that? How do I get to that level of craft?
Was there an aha moment for you when you said, I want to make a living. This is my job. This is something I want to do as a writer? Or, I mean, because there are people who like to tell stories and maybe even write, but they never really thought of it as a career path. Because I've told stories all my life, and it took me until I was almost 50 before I realized that I wanted to write a book. So I'm curious, you know, was there a moment for you that you realized, no, this is my career path?
Thinking about it, I would say probably not. I don't have any memory of thinking, yes, this is what I'm going to do as a career. It was kind of just, it's always been there. It's almost like a foregone conclusion in my mind of, I want to be a writer. I'm going to be a writer. That's really all I ever aspired to become. Although there was this brief period when I was younger where I was like, I'm going to be a veterinarian or a storm chaser. But that didn't end up panning out.
Those two are very awesome jobs, though, actually.
They are.
No, it's just funny. I've had a couple of authors on here that have said they had that moment when they were a kid when they realized that you could get paid for writing books, and that it kind of rang a bell for them. So I was curious if that was something that had happened with you.
Yeah, I don't. The monetary aspect of writing is something that I'm only in the past couple of years since I became traditionally published, that it's become something that I'm conscious of and aware of, versus before that, I mean, I grew up writing fan fiction primarily, and doing like play by post role playing forums for Star Wars and that sort of thing. So writing was more of a playground. It was only when I started to seriously consider publishing that I realized I needed to look into the financial aspect of writing as a career.
You mentioned Star Wars. Has there been anything else that you wrote fanfic for?
Yeah. Lord of the Rings. Let's see. Legend of Zelda. Community. A lot of video games. I'm very passionate about video games, and I find them to be a great source of story fodder and inspiration, especially role-playing games that are heavily driven by character interaction. Those are just, I love those.
I completely agree. And people are probably tired of me saying this on the show, but I'm a huge fan of Assassin's Creed, probably because it's so immersed in history and so character driven.
Yes. I also love Assassin's Creed, the latest game. Phenomenal.
It takes me back to Assassin's Creed 2. It's actually that good.
Yes. Assassin's Creed 2 was my favorite until Odyssey, and now Odyssey it's pretty much right there alongside it.
Yep, definitely. I completely concur. So what drew you to write the weird Western in this genre that you weren't sure was a genre when you got started?
It's kind of a kismet thing where a bunch of influences coalesced at one specific time. And it was kind of random. I had a creative writing assignment that was supposed to be a one-page project. And I ended up writing the opening page, almost essentially what it is today still. with Apostle, and Apostle's voice was so strong, and I enjoyed writing it so much that I just realized I wanted to keep going. I wanted to see what happened to these characters, how the issues resolved, and I knew I wanted to have some sort of speculative element because that is what I tend to write anyway, and the fantasy aspect kind of came naturally. I had had an older idea that I couldn't seem to make work in a straight fantasy of a woman who can take on people's injuries and pass them on with a touch, which is basically what Almina can do in Make Me No Grave. And it just kind of a melding of all of these ideas at one point with that. And then I was reading the Dark Tower series at the time. And, you know, the Gunslinger and that sort of, it's got kind of a Western vibe to it. And that combined with that older idea just was a little bit of magic.
No, it's interesting. And I can see how that would, how it's interesting as an author, how you pull together these ideas that you've been floating around in the back of your head for a long time. And when their time is right, they just bubble to the front. And I've had that happen in a couple of times with a couple of stories I've written that, you know, I'd had this idea for years, and all of a sudden the right circle of events happened in my life that said, wait a minute, this is what that's supposed to be.
Totally. I mean, and I keep track of little idea fragments when they occur to me, and I think, oh, that's kind of interesting. I can't do anything with it right now, but I'm going to make a note of it, because when I need ideas, I'll revisit that document and I'll kind of scan through it and see if anything kind of stands out. And that happened with a short story that I wrote last year. I had this idea of prisoners in a library where back in I don't remember exactly what time period, but they used to chain books in libraries to prevent thieves from taking them because they were very valuable. And I thought, what if there were people who were considered just as valuable and they're, you know, chained in the dark for some reason? And that ended up becoming a short story that was published in Sword and Sonnet, an anthology of battle poets. So, I mean, and that idea I'd had like 2 years ago, 3 years ago, maybe. And it just, you know, when it's time, it's time.
It's fun to kind of have that collection of ideas. I do that too. I keep a notebook of one sort or another around and kind of coalesce all those ideas that pop into my head, because more than one occasion I've had like a fantastic idea and I haven't stopped to write it down. And
right.
4 hours later, yep. I'm beating myself in the head with my fists going, what was it?
Yeah. And one of the other things that I find very helpful when I'm just trying to come up with a story idea is I'll look at those fragments and I'll try to combine them, or I'll take a fragment and whatever its initial genre was, like say it's like clearly a fantasy idea, I'll say, okay, but what if I set it in a sci-fi setting? Or what if I set this in a historical setting? How does that alter the idea? And that's kind of what happened with Make Me No Grave for that first assignment. It was initially in my head a straight fantasy setting. And then I decided, well, what happens if I change it to a Western setting? How does that change the dynamic of these characters? And it ended up working out for the best.
Well, an Apostle is I think, you know, that iconic Western character, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he definitely is. He is the marshal, the man who wears the white hat, that sort of thing. Although he does get that white hat a bit dirty over the course of the novel.
No, and that's I think some of the things that make it so compelling is that so often people make the hero all hero and there's no tarnish on him at all, right? And
right.
I mean, that's boring when you really think about it. I mean, you just know the hero is going to get through because they always get through. But
right.
The fact that they get through and they come out the other side bloody and battered, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you always want to identify what difficulties this character could face, the obstacles that would challenge his or her or their beliefs in some way, in some significant way. It's sort of the, what's the worst thing that could happen to this character? And then you kind of can explore that. And with Apostle, because he is so strong in his morals, he has a very strong sense of right and wrong. It was a fun challenge, you know, seeing what things slid right between his armor, like slid right into his armor, you know, past it and got to him. Because when it does, it's very powerful. We all have those vulnerability points, those shatter points, that when something hits that, all of our beliefs are rattled.
And it's hard for us to, that's part of our humanity, right? I mean, that's the part of ourselves that is most vulnerable. And to see that in a character is great in some ways, but it can be heartbreaking. And I guess, you know, that's part of the reason people keep reading, is they want to find out what happens, because these things happen to us all the time in our own lives, where our own worldviews are shaken by one event or another.
Yeah, definitely. And I love when characters are put into difficult positions where they are forced to compromise in some way, sometimes in a very terrible way, because I feel that is the core of our humanity, is the ability to compromise. But sometimes we compromise in the wrong ways. We compromise our ethical obligations, we make mistakes. And it's interesting to see how characters deal with that, how they come back from maybe going over that moral horizon into the dark. How do they come back from the dark? So, and that's something I explore with both Almina and Apostle, the two main characters of the story.
Well, and Almina, just as far as I've read so far, she seems like the perfect foil for Apostle, because
she's
she's all shades of gray. He's black and white. Yep. And she's all shades of gray, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Almina has this, you know, checkered past, this, you know, secret history. She's angry, she's bitter, and she's afraid. And I think that anger and bitterness all is the shell to the fear and the guilt, which is something that I myself have experienced, and most people I know have that visceral reaction to when they are afraid they might behave in a way that they otherwise wouldn't.
Yeah, I think that we all have that. I think that's one of the things, like I said, I think it's building characters that are human, that have humanity built into them. And it brings me to my next question, because how much do you said you had an idea for Apostle and the idea for Almina with the type of magic that she has. Do you flesh out a lot of your characters to begin with, or do you start with the core of an idea and then you let the story tell you who they are?
Yeah, usually it's just sort of a core idea, and then I explore the character from there and let them kind of tell me the story and decide what they're doing. With Apostle, with both of them, I knew Almina's backstory more than I knew Apostle's. So as I wrote the story, I would throw in little things for Apostle and be like, oh, okay, I understand why he's behaving the way that he is with this situation, because he has this thing in his past. Because behavior tends to be a domino effect based off of memory and experience. You react a certain way based off of something else that happened before, and so on and so forth. And Almina especially is a product of her history, and it's like she's stuck in a tar pit and she's trying to get out of it, but it's just keeps bringing her back.
Now, I know you have a book that's the sequel to the Make Me No Grave, the Render Up the Ghost, and that's coming out when?
It might be coming out in late fall, early winter.
Oh, exciting.
That's kind of what we're hoping for, but I'm thinking it'll probably be early next year.
Okay.
Just based off of the speed that I'm writing at and that sort of thing. I feel the pressure to get this sequel right, because the response to the first one has been so positive and people just really love Apostle and Almina that I really want to.
So we get to bring them back, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Yes.
It will be told from Apostle's point of view again, and we'll get some more of both of their backstories, and we'll get a little bit more, we're going to get a little weirder, and it's going to take place in Texas.
Oh, awesome. Because he mentions Texas, right? Like in the book, early in the book, right? I mean, he mentions having been to hell, I think is the comment he makes.
Yeah, yeah. She tells him to go to hell, and he says he's already been. He spent a summer in Texas.
That's awesome. So that'll be fun to see.
Yeah, I'm really excited. There's a lot of ideas that I'm like thrilled to explore in this book, and tying up some plot lines, especially with Almina's history and how it kind of relates to certain historical characters. I don't want to give away too many spoilers.
Oh, I completely understand. That's fine. No, I think people will be excited to know that there's something forthcoming to continue this storyline, because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I was really surprised that I'm an author who reads the reviews, because I like to see how people are responding to the book. And it just took me by surprise that so many people were asking for the sequel, because I knew I wanted to write one, but I wasn't sure how many people were actually interested in continuing to read about Apostle and Almina. And so many reviews are like, can't wait for a sequel. Hope there's going to be a sequel. And that's pretty much one of the best things you can hear as an author, I think.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I got an email today. If somebody was like, when are you writing the next book in this series?
Yeah. Yep. So. You're like, well, thank you.
It is nice. I'm just curious, because this is such a departure from the science fiction genre, but that series actually looked interesting to me as well. I actually added it to my to read list. Do you find that might be something you'll revisit, is bounce back to other genres that are of interest to you, or is you really settled into Weird Western as a place you're going to stay for a little while?
I consider myself an author who's very, very, like, how to put it? I want to write lots of different stories. I don't want to write the same story over and over again. I'm definitely going to revisit sci-fi the same. I'm actually working on an epic fantasy right now. So kind of touching on a lot of genres, specifically with the Machination series. I'm hoping to one day write the third and final book in that series. So I'm definitely revisiting that, but I don't want to feel constrained to a certain genre. I think of writers like China Mieville and Chuck Wendig. You know, they write across various genres and do a great job at it. And that's kind of what I want to do too. I feel like reading and writing in different genres gives me more perspective and makes me a better writer.
I kind of feel the same way, and I've written, epic fantasy, and I've written urban fantasy, and at the time this comes out, I will have launched a new sci-fi series, which is doing gangbusters, I'm sure.
Awesome.
I have to speak truth to my to my future, I guess.
Yeah. It's a bestseller.
Yeah, but I completely agree. I know that, you know, the conventional wisdom is stay in your box, but I love reading all these different things. And so the ideas for stories come to me in those areas as well.
Yeah, totally. And you want to follow that, you know, it's like the muse visits you and the muse is telling you, hey, we're going to write a sci-fi. You don't tell the muse like, you go with that. You follow where the passion takes you, in my opinion. It may not be always the most business savvy option, but I'm more interested in creating lasting work that is meaningful to me and to my readers.
So speaking of readers, how much interaction are you having with them? I mean, I know I like talked about email earlier and you talked about reading reviews. Do you interact directly on Twitter or other places online?
Oh, yeah, definitely. On Twitter, I love when people at me and talk about how they enjoyed the book. And occasionally I'll look for the hashtag to see if anyone's talking about it. I never comment on reviews unless someone has tagged me directly and it's a positive review. You know, I'll thank them for it because reviews are the lifeblood of this industry for authors, help spread the word. And, you know, it's just nice. Like, I know when I write a nice review for an author, it's always fun when you see that they saw it because you think, well, maybe, you know, you might have made their day with that review. Maybe they might have been in the midst of some tangled plot thread that they're working on in their new book and feeling discouraged. And then they see that review and it's like, oh, well, maybe I can still write.
You know, it's funny because the email I got today was from somebody who said, you know, I never write to authors, but I really wanted to just check in with you because I've enjoyed these books and wanted to know when the next one's coming out. And I was so happy to hear from somebody like that because it meant that I got them to step outside of their shell a little bit because they felt compelled to write. And so that, you're right, it completely lifted me up. And we all, as authors, hit those doldrums in our stories where we're stuck. And me, I don't like to call it writer's block because I always have something I can write. But it's just, where's the story going? You feel like you're churning endlessly at some points in a story and you have to work your way out of it.
Yeah, and every novel, I feel like I sit down and I'm like, oh, I don't know how to write a novel. What was I thinking doing this? Because each novel is its own process. And what worked for one novel does not necessarily work for another. For example, writing Machinations, I wrote at least 500 words, often more, every single day for 6 months. I missed maybe one or two days. Like, I was very disciplined. With the epic fantasy I'm working on now, days will pass in between where I'm just kind of picking apart the plot and trying to figure out what is and what isn't working because it's a bigger story. It's more complex. And I'll keep going back and forth as I'm writing. And I think, oh, well, if I just sit down and do that 500 words every single day, but that just doesn't work for this story. It's just not the same sort of story that you can do that with. And I think that is something that a lot of writers struggle with, especially when they try to write a sequel and they sit down and they realize, oh, my usual habits is they're not working for this. What's wrong? How do I do this? Maybe not aware that it's going to be different for a lot of books each time you sit down to do it.
Yeah, one thing I'm very careful about when people ask me, you know, I get every now and then I'll get somebody saying, how do you do this? I'm curious. And I always try to couch my answer in a, well, this is what works for me.
Exactly. Yes.
Because I don't think there's any one way to write a book or tell a story or anything. I mean, some people tell stories through song and through painting and through their words. There are so many different ways to do each of those things that I would never presume to say you must do X, Y, and Z or it won't work.
Right. And there's been books where I had to set them aside for, you know, a year or more. But that's not really and granted, I needed to do that. And I came back and I was able to finish it or make it way better because I had that perspective. I had that growth. But you can't always give that advice to someone who's on deadline, for example. You can't tell them, well, just set it aside. Like, that kind of advice is just not going to work for them.
Yeah, it's one of those, it's just something I'm very careful about because it's easy for you to say you should do this. And especially when someone's asking you for advice on a specific topic. And I really try not to do that with writing at all because it's something that I think is so personal to everyone.
Yeah, I think we're all stumbling around in the dark and occasionally hands touch and you're like, yes, this way, we're going this way. And advice will help. And other times it's just like a finger poke in the eye, like, oh, and the advice can hurt. So yeah, I'm also conscious of the kind of advice that I'm giving. And generally, like if I'm on Twitter, I'm mostly trying to lift up writers. There's a lot of negativity, especially on Twitter. And I'm trying to put positivity out into Twitter. I definitely feel like realism is great and a dose of reality might be what some writer needs. But on the other hand, it's sometimes nice when you go onto Twitter and you're feeling discouraged and you see another author, whether they're professional or whether they're aspiring, give some sort of little bit of advice or little bit of encouragement. Like, hey, you're not alone in this. You can do it. We can do it.
I'm a complete believer in the theory that the rising tide lifts all the ships.
Exactly.
You know, if we're all positive and we all work together, I still don't think there are too many books out there for the readers, because readers are still clamoring for more books. So
exactly.
I think there's plenty of room for all of us, and we should all help each other out. Final question for you, Haley, as we kind of wrap up here. What would you say to that reader that's flipping through and finds your book and starts to read the description? If they could reach out and if you could reach out and just say something to them that says, this is the book for you, how would you say Make Me No Grave is what they should be reading?
I would say this is a Western for people who think they don't like Westerns. It's got a little bit of everything. It's got humor. It's got pathos. It's got enemies to friends / maybe lovers trope. It's got solidarity and friendship. It's got action, mystery. It's got a little bit of everything. And it's probably going to be unlike anything you've read, in a good way.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the Fantasy Focus community, both on Facebook and over at fantasyfocus.com, actually fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what you have in mind. Also, while you're over there, click on the links right below the podcast player, the little audio player there at the top of the episode page, and you can actually subscribe to the show directly through those links if you have a mobile app for iOS or Android devices, or even by email. That's where you can subscribe. We do have some pretty awesome authors coming up and scheduled for the next few months, including Tora Moon for the next podcast, so you don't want to miss them. Make sure you subscribe. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books and on my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where you can get a free book if you sign up for my newsletter while you're over there. Whatever you do, though, come here, get back to this show, and subscribe so you can get the next podcast. In the meantime, I want to remind you, as I do every single time we get together here on the show, make sure you keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.